This podcast may contain content that is not suitable for listeners under the age of 18. If you are 17 or younger and wish to educate yourself about sex and relationships, you should visit scarleteen.com. That's scarleteen with one T.
Merry holidays. You might have heard this episode before if you've been listening for a while. Danny and I are working on adding our older episodes of Nope, We're Not Monogamous to YouTube. And this is one of my absolute favorite guests, topics, and episodes that we have done ever. So we decided to re-release it. Hopefully you get as much out of it as I have. Take a listen.
Hey, I'm Alicia, your non-monogamous relationship coach. Welcome to the podcast where my friends and I chat about our relationships, enthusiastic non-monogamy, polyamory, swinging, kink, and our lives. You'll get a candid peek into what makes it worth it to live life outside the box. And in case you're still wondering, nope, we're not monogamous.
Have you ever felt awkward or uncomfortable talking about STIs and sexual safety with a new partner, an existing partner, anybody at all? I know I sure have. Today I'm being joined by Evelyn Dacker, MD, a Latinx American sex positive integrative family medicine physician. She created the Safer Sex Communication Model, STARS, to help facilitate open and honest sex conversations. She's a consent and sex educator, sexual health activist, and a TEDx speaker. And she's talking to us today about her STARS framework, but also about love and polyamory and relationships and how to stay grounded when you're feeling new relationship energy and how she mastered compersion. Evelyn is, she's active in creating a safe space for LGBTQIA youth and adults and helping people through illness, trauma, life transitions towards finding balance and joy. She incorporates a multidisciplinary approach with principles of gratitude and pleasure to support her patients when they're creating their own wellness. And in addition to practicing medicine, Evelyn was the executive director of Sex Positive Portland from 2017 to 2020. I am ridiculously excited to talk to her today because I've been a fan of her work for quite a while. I think you're going to love this conversation and not only love it, but get a ton out of it. Enjoy.
There it is. Perfect. Awesome. Okay. Well, welcome. I'm really, really excited to chat with you. I've been following you for quite a while, actually. As I'm sure you know, my podcast is Nope, We're Not Monogamous. So The things I love to talk about are sex, love, and non-monogamous relationships.
Oh, good. I like to talk about that too.
Yeah. And I actually teach I teach a group sex course.
Oh.
And I was like, a big part of this needs to be sexual safety and STIs and, you know, all of the information that people need to have. Mm-hmm. And I think someone sent me a link to your website, to your STARS website.
Okay.
Great. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, who is this? I need to know more. So I was kind of fangirling over you and was like, you know, I should just ask her to come on the podcast.
Yeah. And you get to see me in like my absolute messiest way. So I like that.
It's the best way, right? Like the most authentic.
Yeah. Totally. I was like, oh, I have this podcast, so I gotta like work out early and make sure I get take a shower and my hair will be all dry and I'll look all good. And then I'm like, fuck it. My day just kind of got away from me. So,
I know how that is. Totally. Okay. So let's see where to start. Tell me, first of all, what...
Okay, I want to ask you this. I actually want to ask you something personal first. Mm-hmm. We are in a couple of similar like groups on Facebook and communities, mm-hmm. and so mm-hmm. I'm curious: are you monogamous, non-monogamous? What's your relationship structure style that you associate with?
It's such a good question because I've been really sitting with it a lot today. My history is I was actually in a monogamous marriage for 22 years, and we opened up about 6 years ago. You know, I was one of those people that was non-monogamous before I got married, then had this stretch of monogamy and thought, oh, all the issues in my marriage could be solved if I go back to being non-monogamous, which mm-hmm. as if anybody who's read Polysecure never works. It just doesn't ever work. And I ended up leaving my marriage about 5 years ago. And since then, since 2014, I consider myself polyamorous, which is a form of non-monogamy. It's very heart-based, and I have, you know, it's interesting navigating the world as somebody who's polyamorous too. And I'm, you know, one of the things I've been thinking a lot about today is that I have a new partner who I'm falling in love with, and mm-hmm. thinking like, you know, because I'm polyamorous and I have another serious relationship and, you know, a bunch of lovers, people don't really take it as seriously. And sometimes I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't take it as seriously, because when we're monogamous and we have one person that we're falling in love with, oh my God, that's the whole world, right?
Yeah.
But like, what is it falling in love with someone in a polyamorous situation? I've been really like, does it just not have the same gravitas? And when I tell people I'm falling in love, and they're like, yeah, but you have, you know, this person and that person. And I'm like, yeah, but it's being polyamorous. It's still very significant mm-hmm. and it's still really meaningful and it's still really exciting. So yeah, I'm not looking to like get married, and I'm beyond having children, or, you know, I'm not looking for that one. So it's just interesting. So I'm polyamorous, and I have a long-term relationship of about 5 years. I have a commit relationship also that's about 5 years long. And then I have a couple of other commit relationships, and then I'm falling in love with somebody new. So there's that.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, I'm so happy for you. It is. It's, I did not know. I have been non-monogamous like for about 8 years. And when I met my husband, now similar, I was married monogamously for 13 years. And then when we split, I was like, actually, I don't want to be monogamous again. Like, that's just not what I want to spend another 13 years doing. So my husband and I never were closed. But I wasn't sure if I was polyamorous. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Until I fell in love with someone else. And then I was like, oh, okay. Actually, now I see. Now I see what it is. But I wasn't sure, you know? And there's something about when you're monogamous that like all of these assumptions come with love. Like, now it means we have to do all of these things. And when you take that expectation off the table, it's like you get to, I don't know, just enjoy the falling in love part more.
Exactly. Yes. I almost think when you take the expectation out of the relationship, you actually co-create something that could be so much more deep and powerful. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is the most exciting thing about falling in love. And really, I was listening to this other podcast a friend sent me. I'm forgetting the name of Glennon Doyle, somebody very famous. And they were talking about like falling in love and landing in love. And I loved that. I was like, oh yeah. I think the goal of polyamory is landing in love.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. That lands. That's fantastic.
And I've been really thinking a lot about new relationship energy, NRE, mm-hmm. in this context, especially in the context of polyamory, because it's such, it could be really wonderful and it could be really destructive. Mm-hmm. And I've been really deconstructing NRE so people could understand that there's two things going on. One is all the neurochemicals, right? Mm-hmm. The dopamine, the oxytocin, all that yummy stuff. But there's also this element that we project with to other people. And that's where expectations comes to. And then when we're in that, if we have other lovers, how does it affect and land on our other lovers? Mm-hmm. And how do we navigate NRE biologically, spiritually, and, you know, physically, and still be in that love relationship with those lovers that you have landed with already, right? That you're landed in love with, because they're so important. And so it's been really interesting for me to be in this situation, because it's been a long time since I fell in love.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm curious, what have you found to be helpful to, like, stay grounded in that NRE?
First of all, just recognizing that the things that are making me ungrounded are all these chemicals, these neurochemicals. And I guess I'm just a little too, I have this, because I'm a physician, I have this somewhat of a clinical detachment to that, because it's like, oh, this is what's going on. And I find it actually, it very dysregulating to my nervous system. You know, I don't sleep, I don't eat. Oh, I don't like that. But what I have found that's really helpful is for me to recognize that those are just passing phases, and to really work on not projecting all this, like, fantasy on this other person. And at the same time, being really grounded, honest, and authentic with my current, you know, primary partner. We don't live together, so we don't have a marriage, but it's so important that he understands that he's still important, that I am still going to make time for him, that, you know, I'm not going to just throw him out because I have this new and shiny thing. And so I think that just, you know, making those choices and kind of showing up for him, it also keeps me really grounded in what it is, because I have this other beautiful relationship that's healthy and that's, you know, caring. And then I have this new shiny thing. So it's, you know, navigating that is it. In a way, the first time I'm kind of doing that, even though I've had multiple partners in the past and even other, you know, co-partners, I don't really like using the hierarchy. It just still was different. It was like, they were both like, I was NRE about both of them at the same time. And this time I'm not, there's like somebody new. And
Yeah. Being able to reassure your existing partners and like, and continue to nurture that relationship.
Yeah. And you know, there's the other thing that I have found incredibly helpful, and I'm going to plug my stars work.
Yeah.
Is actually stars and doing that. It was the first. So stars is an acronym for a safer sex talk that we should share with other partners. But actually the most important part of stars is knowing those five elements for ourselves. And what they are is our sexual health, STI status, what turns us on, what we need to avoid, our relationship intentions and expectations, and our safer sex etiquette, or how we're going to create a safer sex container together. And it was really exciting for me to have some new person that really has never done stars or talked about it, you know, and to have to start a relationship with that. And it was great. I think that also was key to keeping me from floating away too much, because, you know, we got into it. It was like when I first talked about what my relationship, you know, intentions are and desires, I made it very clear, like, what are mine? Not what I want him to want, but what are mine? And maybe he can't meet it, and that's okay. But knowing, like, oh, this is actually the kind of relationship I want to have with someone, and being able to express it to them without fear just was so amazing. I mean, it really opened up this whole way of communicating. And then, you know, also my other partner knows and is part of that conversation in a way as well. You know, looping them both in.
Yeah. I love that. Using that framework for not just sexual safety, but for just early conversations in a relationship.
Yes.
That people like to just usually just gloss over.
Oh, and I think that you know, actually understanding those five things for ourselves mm-hmm. before we even get into a relationship is so important. But then learning how to communicate it with another person and having them be able to communicate back what they want, even if they've never thought about it before, it's remarkable. I have to say, for my own life, since I've started doing it, it has made all of, like, when I don't do it with a person is always when I, like, trip up with them. I'm like, oh no, you gotta, let's go back. Let's start over. Okay. What is it that we want? What don't I like? You know, so I find that having this pre-intimacy talk also makes my personal polyamory just really quite, I hate to say easy, but kind of easy.
I like easy. That works.
Yeah. Like, I don't have poly drama.
Yeah. 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 Setting it. I don't know. I have this idea that, that kind of one of the, like, biggest sources of drama and disappointment is having like unmet expectations or unspoken expectations.
Absolutely. With everybody, yeah. Right? Even friendship.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like just making assumptions of how you think people should behave and their ideas are completely different.
It's true. And I think that's, and you know, when you're in new relationship energy, when you're in that like crushy Twitter pated thing, it's so easy to just like assume and have expectations because our desires are so high. Mm-hmm. So talking about what your expectations are and what it is you need is great to do before you go any further.
We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Alicia here. You know, the voice you've been tuning into episode after episode. Today, I'm popping in with an invitation that's really close to my heart. Behind the scenes, I've been crafting something special just for you, my dedicated listeners. If there's a voice inside you that's seeking guidance on navigating the realms of relationships and non-monogamy, wanting to like boost your confidence and find that unwavering sense of security, or you're struggling to manage the tricky waters of jealousy, I'm here to offer my support. I've cleared my schedule to open up 50 slots this month for free one-on-one clarity chats directly with me. So this is your opportunity to dive deep into those pressing questions and come out on the other side with newfound clarity and direction. The availability on this is super limited and these spots are going to fill up really fast. So don't miss your chance to connect with me. Head over to my website, aliciapayne.com, right now. Go secure your spot because together we can uncover a path to a more joyful, fulfilling, and easy non-monogamous journey. Talk to you soon.
Oh, that's so good. I love it. Okay, tell me more about STARS.
So STARS came to life in 2015, after I went to some talk and they were talking about like an elevator speech, the things you should ask somebody as you're going up to hook up with them. And in 2015, I was married. I was just entering this whole like, oh, what is, I was trying to learn more about sexuality to bring to my patients and to, I was kind of doing a little blog. And so I took this class and they were talking about this like elevator speech. And I was like, that is fascinating. There was about 15 things that they were supposed to talk about, but I was just like, oh my God, why don't we do this? Like, this is something I have to teach all my patients. So I went back and I would be sitting there writing all these things, like talk about these things. And I'm like, this, I need something that sums it up better. So I came up with STARS. And again, STARS is our sexual health and STI status. Mm-hmm. And these are the things that I believe that if we learn to communicate these five things to each other before we actually have sex, and it's not just hookups, it's like any kind of relationship. It's like maybe even sometimes of friendships. I don't know. But like you probably don't need the sexual health part, but sexual health, our turn-ons, you know, what are our desires? What is it we want in relationship? But also, like, how do we like to be touched? What turns us on? What are our arousal patterns? Are you super sexual? Are you kinky? Are you more tantric? Are you, you know, like, what is it that you really seek? Because we don't, everybody kind of just assumes that all, everybody's just having like penis and vagina sex all the time. And that's the only one. And then the next one is avoids, which are boundaries. What are the things that you don't want to do or are just no-nos? Or even like for me, I have three like major no-nos. And they're don't yell at me, don't call me names, and don't hang up on me. You know, so like that's very one clear. Of my – that right. Those are some of my avoids. And if – and I make that very clear in the beginning. But it's also like – don't slap me without my consent, or, you know, don't ejaculate on me without, you know, without having a conversation for, you know, like some pretty simple, basic things that people don't talk about, but then you find yourself in the situations and like, oh my God, that really pissed me off. Right. So knowing our boundaries, it's also a really important place that if we've had prior trauma, and we could maybe it's a little door to open up and talk about that with a person, because especially people who are raised as women, when we get into a, you know, sexual trauma space, we tend to either fawn or freeze. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard for partners to pick up that you may be dissociating and you're maybe in a trauma response then. So it's so, I believe that just like knowing what happens to oneself and letting your partner know before you even get any clothes off is just going to save so much heartache.
Yeah.
And then there's the relationship intentions and expectations, which is probably my favorite and maybe the hardest one, because you got to really know what the hell you want. And sometimes like I have some partners, all I want to have is sex. And that's mm-hmm. great. So like, we just know that that's what our relationship, it's still very love-based and sacred, but it's just a different flavor than somebody who I want to actually go deep with in a more, you know, energetic or spiritual way with a person. So like, you know, you can have different intentions and expectations from other people. I also like that place to talk about aftercare, which is like some of this talk doesn't just come from that first safer sex talk. It also evolved through kink consent, mm-hmm. Swinger consent, polyamorous. Like I just took all these concepts from all these sex positive subcultures to really try to bring it out to the mainstream. Because man, could you just imagine how great things could be if we knew this stuff about each other?
God, if people would just start talking more about everything, sex and desires, yes. Like sex desires and boundaries, like just, if we talked about it, it would change so our whole culture.
Oh, yeah. Two things if we talked more about that would change our whole culture, would free us from colonialism, and that's sex and money.
Yes, yes, yes. Completely, completely. Mm-hmm. 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 Mm-hmm.
So,
just
you know,
putting them on the table.
Yep. It's, you know, finances are not my strong suit, but I love talking about sex and I love changing the conversation around it because I think sexuality is so important for ourselves and our health and the way that we relate to people, right? The way we love. Sexuality is related to the most fundamental thing we want, and that is connection and love. Mm. So that's why STARS really excites me. The last S started out kind of like, oh, what are your safer sex protocols? But it's actually changing. It's morphing into like creating a safer sex container with another person. Like, what do you need to have this container that you can become authentic? So for someone, if I were just going to go hook up with someone, then I would want to know, okay, are we going to use condoms? How much alcohol, or are there other chemicals that are going to be in the mix, and how do we negotiate that? I'm don't have to worry about pregnancy anymore, so that's not important for me, but for other people it could be. It also, but it's bigger than that, because it's also about like, how do we keep ourselves safe within intimacy and co-create it with another person? And sometimes it's, hey, let's make sure that we have check-ins, or, and are we meeting each other's needs? Also knowing I think that one of the things for me personally that STARS is so important is it empowers me. So mm-hmm. if I'm with a partner that I do this whole talk with and then they don't listen to it, or we're in bed and then they do something that is obviously like goes against it, then it empowers me to be able to say, oh, this isn't going to work out and I'm going to step out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it totally does. It totally does. I think what happens for a lot of people is they sweep it under the rug because they didn't say anything ahead of time and go, oh, well, they didn't know this was a thing for me. So I'm just gonna, you know, avoid it later.
Right. And we just start accepting things. Right.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I believe is one of the biggest erotic killers in long-term relationships, is that we start accepting things and not communicating things, and we just take each other for granted, and we have expectations, and we forget aftercare, you know, just everything. That if we actually start talking about these important elements before we ever get naked, and then we know that there are important things to talk about throughout our relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. The question that comes to mind for me is, do you recommend that people practice?
Oh, yeah. Practice is fun. I teach a workshop. Mm-hmm. And it's a long workshop because what we do is we practice. And I used to do it live in Portland, but with COVID, I do teach it on Zoom. And we put people into breakout groups. And at first, everybody's like, oh my God, what? You want me to tell a stranger my STI status? Or you want me to tell a stranger like what turns me on? By the end of the class, every single person is like, that was fantastic. Because I got to hear other people, I got to practice, and now I'm going to go home and I'm going to do it with a friend.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel abnormal and weird once you've said it out loud.
Yeah, because we're so taught not to say things out loud. Mm-hmm. So yes, I think practicing is fantastic. In fact, the first thing to do, what I recommend, is everybody I have a worksheet. Mm-hmm. And they could just fill that out and start creating your own STARS and start thinking about it for yourself. And then find a friend, you know, or if you're in a relationship, say, hey, let's do this together. We've never really done this. Yeah. Let's sit down and like make it a game. I've done it as a game on Tinder dates. I have done it with friends. I mean, it's something that could be easily modified, but practicing it makes it so much easier. The first time you do it, that's why it's so nice to do the workshops, because it's usually the first time people do it. And then they feel so much more comfortable doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I found that that's one of the things I enjoy about online dating mm-hmm. and starting to get to know people like via text or online, is because it feels so much easier to bring all those things up before I even bother going to meet someone. Mm-hmm. Like, here's my status. These are the mm-hmm. things I'm into, mm-hmm. you know, here's what I'm not into. How about you?
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, being poly or swinger or not, or just non-monogamous in general, a lot of people know this and they talk about it, but it's our kids. They're not doing it. And it's like people who are still, so really STARS is not written for, even though it's very useful for non-monogamy. It's actually, I wrote it for people who are monogamous and just mainstream. And if we could get them to start talking about it, oh my gosh, I really believe we're going to decrease sexual assault. We're going to decrease non-consent touch. You know, it's just, I really think we're going to have just so much better and yummier sex and relationships and love.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And I love where it came from. Mm-hmm. Right. Like just this intention for really making the world a better place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel that my generation has not done enough for the kids. Mm. And the fact that the Me Too movement had to happen mm-hmm. this late in life really goes to show we have just not done enough. Mm-hmm. And so I feel very motivated by that. I feel very motivated by really wanting to decrease. I mean, one of the big reasons I want to decrease sexual assault on college campuses or for young adults, for people between the age of 19 and 25 who mm-hmm. do have the greatest risk of sexual assault. And when that happens at that age, it could impact everybody's entire life and your own sexuality and the ways that you feel about your body, et cetera, et cetera. So for me, that's what really keeps me. Every time I get tired and I'm like, oh, I'm never going to get anywhere. Nobody's going to care. Nobody's listening to this. How is it going to get out? I just remember like, no, I have to keep plugging away because I really want to try to make an impact.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I watched your TED talk mm-hmm. and talking about this and, there were a lot of really beautiful moments and really impactful things. But when you were talking about your kids going to college and mm-hmm. how you wanted their experience to be and not to be, I was like, I have middle schoolers. And I was like, yeah, exactly.
You know, and almost every time I do a workshop or something, people are like, could we get this into high schools or middle schools? I'm like, it's up to you guys, the parents, mm-hmm. you know, we need to change our sex education in general. Abstinence-based sex ed just keeps us controlled and doesn't really teach us how to have relationships and mm-hmm. even or how to own our bodies or be in our bodies, right?
Yeah. Or know that you're even allowed to have pleasure.
Exactly.
Wait, it's supposed to feel good?
Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah, I could go off on that. Uh-huh. You know, as a physician, it feels like sometimes all I'm doing is telling people not to have pleasure. Don't eat this. Don't have that. Go exercise. You're too, you know, we got you to lose weight. You stop smoking, like just everything. So like, you know, and that is not helpful. I think that by actually recognizing how much pleasure, how important pleasure is to get us out of our head and into our body and mm-hmm. how much better we are living this life when we actually share space with this beautiful thing we call our body.
Yes. So good. I'm curious. Can I ask you some questions about STIs? Cause I get a lot I get so many questions. Especially, well, so, okay. So the STARS, I love this framework. Like I said, I teach a class on group sex. I coach polyamorous people and non-monogamous people in all the realms, but mm-hmm. in this group sex course, I love to give people a framework that they can go into, have essentially an elevator speech, like memorize. So if they're at a party or something, that they can just bust things out quickly right. in a conversation right. before they start swapping bodily fluids. Uh-huh. And so one of the questions that I get asked a lot there are, is about, I totally lost it. What was the question? I know what it is. It'll come to me. Oh. One of the questions I get a lot is if, the STIs that are commonly tested for can be transferred orally mm-hmm. because everybody talks about condom usage mm-hmm. and nobody talks about dental dams or gloves or any of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, because unfortunately, when we think about when the CDC and public health thinks about STIs, the number one STI that we have been dealing with is HIV, mm-hmm. right? So the thing that helps prevent HIV more than anything and the way people get HIV is usually through genital insertion into an orifice. So condoms is what we use for that. But then we start thinking that that's what we need for everything, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we need for, and it is true. Like condoms definitely help with gonorrhea and chlamydia, syphilis, but they don't help with things like herpes or HPV, all those other viruses. And then you're right. What do you do about oral stuff? Could you get things orally if you're playing with genitals? Of course. And how do you prevent the oral transmission? Like if somebody is not having intercourse, but they're doing, you know, oral sex on a person and they have gonorrhea, And they think, oh, I don't have to worry about gonorrhea because, you know, we're not doing any insertions. But you could get gonorrhea in the back of your throat. You can get chlamydia in your eye, right? So what do you do? How do you prevent that? Well, the second thing that the CDC says is you should be monogamous. And if you can't be monogamous, then you should abstain, right? That's how you prevent it all. So a lot of these things are difficult to navigate. When you're sexually active and there's certain bacteria and viruses and you know, parasites that are transmitted through close contact, you don't have to have sex. It's just through close body-body contact. You're going to pass things on to each other. But you can also pass, like, staph infections, but we don't consider that an STI.
Uh-huh.
So what do you do other than wearing like full body latex or abstaining? I mean, so really the answer goes back to like why it's so important to do like the STARS talk is you just get routinely tested. You mm-hmm. get routinely tested. You get tested everywhere that you have a point of insertion. So like if you are having oral sex, even if you're not having genital sex, you should get tested in your throat for gonorrhea and chlamydia. Mm-hmm. And then you know, okay, that's okay. You should get tested in your genitals. And if you're having anal sex, you should get tested in your anus as well for those bacterias. And then, you know, routine testing for syphilis and HIV, depending on your status. Which brings us to the two other, you know, there's hepatitis, which you can get tested, but the two other H's that are kind of the nemesis of all STIs, and that's herpes and HPV.
Mm-hmm.
HPV is, you know, the common cold of STIs. I just assume that you have it, you had it. And if you have it, you're going to find it and it's going to be treated and it's going to go away. People really kind of make a much bigger deal out of it, but because now we're testing for it. So now right. people are like all wrapped up around it. Before the testing was available, which, you know, the testing only really became available universally maybe 15 years ago.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty new. I think it started being tested in the 80s, but routine testing probably started about 15 years ago. So now we know, and now we're all worried about HPV. I'd say don't worry about HPV. There's no way of decreasing other than vaccinations,
mm-hmm.
and just, you know, just being as careful as possible. So then that leads for herpes. My favorite STI, only because it's so, I find herpes really interesting. Like as a virus, I find it interesting as well as how people relate to it. Mm-hmm. And I find herpes is the metaphor for all of our sex fears, all of our sex guilt, all of our sex shame. Like if you could put it in one bottle and put it, make it into a virus, it's herpes. Because people feel that like if they get herpes, they're dirty. They did something wrong. They're marked for life, right? Because they have virus. But if they got chicken pox and they get a shingles outbreak, which is practically the same thing, I've never heard anybody be upset about that. It's like, right. Oh yeah, that sucks. It's painful. I'm unhappy. But I've never heard somebody be like, I'm a pariah now. Nobody will ever love me because I have shingles. But they do with herpes, with herpes simplex. And so I think that my best answer for that is really examine where your fear comes from. Examine where that fear and that risk tolerance of like, no, I won't be around anybody with herpes. Why? What does it mean to you? Mm-hmm. And why is it so traumatic? I feel like there's ways that we can minimize transmission. And those ways are, you know, by talking about it. By using antivirals. And really the people who get the most herpes are adolescents because they're not talking about it.
Right.
And then Black people, Latinx people have a very high, especially women have a much higher rate. And I think that's also because the cultures, we just don't talk about sex and we don't talk about things. And then we're like, oh, if you get it, then you're stigmatized for it.
Yeah.
There's no good, you know, the blood test, the serum blood test is the best we got, but it's very problematic Because if you come back showing that you have an antibody, and we all know what antibodies are now because of COVID.
Right.
If it shows that we have antibodies, well, that I guess that means that we've had herpes. So I guess if we've had herpes, then we could transmit it. But the truth is we just don't know because it's not studied well enough. Most of the studies that were done like, you know, 20 years ago. We haven't had any really good studies on how, if people have positive antibodies, are they shedding? Are they transmissible? We just don't know. So it's hard for me to say, oh, yes, you have herpes. Are you transmitting it? Possibly, but how, you know, but possibly not. And, right. And what do you do about that? And for me, it's like, okay, and what does that matter? If you haven't had an outbreak ever, or if your outbreaks are so low, or if you're on antivirals, so? Yeah. Maybe I don't mean to minimize it, but I really, really just believe that so much of our fear is tied into our sex negativity and what we're doing. And that we're doing something that brings us pleasure, but our entire life we're told that we shouldn't be doing it. And we shouldn't be doing it with more than one person. And if we get this, it's because, you know, because we're slutty or because we made a mistake. Yeah. Yeah. So I never have a good answer for people. Like I don't have a great, like, oh yeah, be tested. Or yeah, don't be tested. Or it's definitely not part of the STI panel. It's not recommended. So most doctors will not order it. If it's really important to find out if you've had those antibodies. And the other thing is, like, the antibodies could cross-react with other herpes viruses. So sometimes it might show that you have the antibodies, but it may not be from herpes simplex. We just don't know. And so those false positives are pretty high. So most doctors won't order the test. Most doctors, if they order the test, they don't know how to read the test. And then they'll say, yes, it's positive, and go live with that. But if it's really important for a person, especially a non-monogamous person, to want to be tested because their polycule wants it or whatever reasons, then there is something in the CDC says that if you have multiple partners that you can get the test. It's one of the five reasons to be tested if you have multiple partners. So I always tell people, if you really want it, just tell your doctor the CDC says that if you have multiple partners, you can get the serum test. And then that person, the patient should go do some work and understand how the tests are read. In fact, if you go to my website, even the STARS website, I have a little, my own website, EvelyneDacker.com. I have a herpes handbook and I have an STI handbook that kind of explains how you should read the tests. If they do the one test that the most useful test, and it's called Herpes Select. And then find doctors, if you can, that are sex positive and know how to counsel people and how to deal with disclosure. And and try to recognize, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic where people who are dying don't believe exists. So, and yet herpes is like such a horrible thing.
There's so much. I mean, I don't know if it's misinformation, but there's just so much different information out there. You know, some people are like, well, everybody has it, or 75% of people have it. Yeah. And other people are like, well, it's just cold sores. You know, like there's so much information and nobody knows what is factual or not factual.
Yes, you could transmit cold sores to genitals.
Yeah.
There is known that if you have type 1 in your genitals, it actually protects you against type 2 because you have some immunity against, like, the vaccine, right? Some immunity against it. So if you were to get type 2, it will be much milder than if you didn't have anything. If you have type 1 on your lips, never had it genitally, it could also be milder because you have some of the antibodies. So having type 1 could almost be protective.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I love having you as a resource, and I love that you have that information on your website. That's wonderful. I'll put the links in the show notes, because I think that having access to that information is super, super important. The thing that I always tell my clients is, if you're having sex, you're taking a measured risk.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, if you're eating ice cream, you're taking a measured risk too.
Yeah. Yes.
And if you're getting in a car, there too. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything we do is taking a risk. So why not take it? But if you, I think that it would be so helpful if people understand that and communicate mm-hmm. that. So yes, if you're going to be at a sex party, if you're going to do a hookup, if you're going to do anything, you're taking a risk. And you take a risk with more than just STIs, right? You're taking a risk emotionally. You're taking a risk physically in other ways. Mm. So
yes. Yes, absolutely. Okay. I'm curious. You had mentioned finding sex positive doctors. And I've heard this question a lot as well. People are scared to tell their doctors that they're non-monogamous. Yeah. So how would you suggest people approach that with their doctors?
You know, I think the most important thing is to be honest and open and authentic. And if your doctor shames you, find another doctor. Mm-hmm. Because we are not, but find a younger doctor. Younger doctors tend to be more, you know, more sex positive.
Yeah.
You know, so you just, that's how we educate people too. I mean, doctors are uncomfortable talking about sexuality because we're not taught it. So a lot of people, and we're taught, you know, monogamy, abstinence, condoms, the whole big spiel, and not real life stuff. But when doctors, just like any other people, realize that there's so many normal people who are non-monogamous,
mm-hmm.
it normalizes it.
Yes.
And when people realize, oh, there's so many people who like kinky sex, it normalizes it. It just normalizes the fact that we all are human. Mm-hmm. So if people are in a doctor that they can't communicate their specific needs, find another doctor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I mean, it's happened to me. I've had, you know, doctors, I'd be like, hey, I need an STI panel. And my doctor's like, oh, I'm not sure how to even do that. I'm like, oh my gosh.
But you're married.
Right.
Exactly. I think that's the most common response people get, but you're married. You don't
know. Or they'll be like, oh, I'm sorry. Did your spouse cheat on you? If you're female bodied, mm-hmm. oh, your spouse might have cheated on you. I had somebody tell me that when they get called about their positive chlamydia test, they were kind of like, the doctor was like kind of rough on the man, but was really sorry for the wife, you know? And she's like, you know what? It's fine. We're non-monogamous. Don't, you know, like the assumptions people make. So,
yeah.
So, yeah. You know. It's better to tell your doctor up front. Mm-hmm. You're not monogamous. You want to be tested. You want to be tested regularly. If they could just do a standing order so you don't feel, you know, you're not made to feel like, oh, I have to call every 3 months or 6 months and get my testing. Just like make it so it's normalized. This is who I am. I'm doing it consensually and it's part of my health care.
Yeah. Oh, so good. I want, like, my wish for the world is that people feel more comfortable talking about sexuality. Yes. And all of the pieces that come with that.
Mine too.
Yeah.
I mean, I want that because I think it will help reinvent love.
Oh, yes. The best thing.
Yeah. I mean,
love love.
I know. And really, like, Bell Hooks is the first person I read that talks about love being a verb. It's something you do. So I really believe, like, part of what reinventing love is a verb. It's what we do. So taking care of our health, talking about sexuality, talking about pleasure, talking about what we need and and even going into the dark places and talking about our trauma is all reinventing love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. Earlier you had mentioned that you had mentioned hierarchy, that you don't like to use hierarchy. And I'm curious if you think, because this is another question I get a lot. Is it considered couples privilege if, like, a married couple or a nesting couple are barrier free, but don't make that available to other partners?
You know,
that's what I did too.
I think the question, I think the question's kind of judgy. Because I feel that people are allowed to make the decisions that they need for themselves, honestly. And I don't care if it's a married couple or a non-married couple, But if any two people don't want to use barriers, but they want to use barriers with other people, that's their choice. It's their body. Who cares? I don't think that has to do with hierarchy or couples privilege. I think couples privilege is like if telling one partner they can't fall in love, you know, or like when it becomes controlling.
Yeah.
But, and if they're using condoms as a method of control, then you got to look at that. Is there, what's behind that? And is that toxic or not? But if you're using barriers with all, everybody else except your primary or the one person, why? That's fine. Do what you need to do. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think we can get carried away with, oh, that's hierarchy or, oh, that's couples privilege. I mean, we live in a world that is hierarchical. We live in a world that the couple's privilege is everywhere. We live in a world, you know, where white people have more privilege. I mean, let's just recognize that that exists. And then let's be able to make our own choices in how we want to live our lives.
Yeah.
I don't want to tell people they can't do that because I don't want people to tell me that I have to conform to their standards. I'm not going to. I choose not to be hierarchical, but it doesn't mean there are people that I spend more time with. Mm-hmm. There are people that I, you know, choose to, that I'm closer with.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just natural.
Yeah. 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 I love that. Yeah. I feel like it's, another piece of, you know, taking that measured risk. You're measuring and deciding how much risk you want to take with everybody you're fucking.
Exactly. Or loving.
Yes. 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 Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, it's, I think it's really easy when you see somebody who's polyamorous to think, oh, who has multiple partners or lovers, that you're like, oh, you're a slut. Or, you know, again, all that sex negativity. But really, for me, it's about how many people I get to love. Mm-hmm. And some of the people that I consider partners are not people that I'm sexual with. I'm not sexual with everybody. So for me, that's why I consider myself polyamorous, because it's really about here. It's really about my heart.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Okay. What? I'm curious what, this is a question I ask everybody that comes on the show, is what is the most like inappropriate or awkward or intrusive thing someone has said to you or asked you about your relationship structures?
Honestly, I have not had anybody say anything to my face, negative or awkward, except one person, and that's my mother. And, but you know what? I have to give her a lot of grace. My mother is, you know, 86-year-old Mexican woman who never imagined her daughter would be polyamorous and live a life like this. So she's the only person that struggles with it and is not liking it. But I honestly have never, I think because I've just set myself up to just be me.
Yeah.
You know, and I just try to be me, and I don't try to hide things. I don't try to throw them in people's faces. But, you know, and people ask me questions like, oh, how do you deal with jealousy? Or like, how do you, you know, what do you do about STIs? And I'll always answer them. I think I'm naturally a much more compulsive person because I really enjoy love.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do. I enjoy loving people. So like, I don't like getting jealous because it just gets in the way of that.
Oh, I love that. I can completely, can't say I can completely relate to that, but I completely agree with that. And I think that's why from very young identified as like, I'm just very jealous. I was very jealous and very possessive. And when I made the choice, like I knew I did not want to be monogamous, and I went, well, shit, now I've got a lot of work to do. Because those aren't traits that like make my life better in any way. And so yes, I completely agree that like, I don't want that to get in the way of love. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I taught myself compersion when I was 15 years old.
How? Because,
you know, I had a group of all these girlfriends and I loved my girlfriends. Like I always really liked having girlfriends, and then all of a sudden they all got boyfriends. And so it's really easy to feel jealous. Like, you all of a sudden there's this boy taking away your friend, or you have a crush on a boy and he likes somebody else. And I decided that rather than be jealous, I'm going to be happy for them. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to be happy for my girlfriend that she has a boyfriend. And I'm going to be happy for that boy I have a crush on that he's liking somebody else and that she likes him. I'm just going to be happy because if I really like them, then I should be happy for them. So I don't know. I just kind of taught myself that at a really young age. And it's actually made my life much easier as a polyamorous person.
Yes. Oh, young Eveline was brilliant.
I don't know. I mean, I just figured out how to be me. And I also want to say one of the things, when you ask me the question, does anybody say anything rude or, you know, I'm privileged. Let me just own my privilege. I have an MD after my name.
Yeah.
People are not going to put me down because of that in the same way they would put somebody else down. And, you know, I and it's such a weird thing to have. Like, you go to school. I didn't go to school to have this privileged position. I actually just love what I do. But I have, you know, being a woman who is very I'm really self-assured, and I come off very confident. And then I'm a doctor. So I have a certain level of attractiveness. So having all of that packaged together, people aren't going to come up and be nasty. And I'm nice. I try to be nice to people. So, you know, people aren't going to be, and if they do it behind my back. And when they do that, it's about them. It's not about me.
I love that. That's, I think that helps to give a lot of perspective for people, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. because everybody's got some form of privilege. And so to go, well, this is actually where I'm at. And so this is how I might be perceived. And I really think that helps give perspective. Thank you.
And when people struggle with it, if they get that, if that's thrown in their face, I would just recommend the most important empowering thing to do is recognize that it's not about them at all. It's about the person who's doing it. And if instead of the shame or guilt, if you could turn it around and be compassionate for that person who's throwing it at you, because they're suffering, because they're in a place of shame and fear. It's them. It's not you. If you are non-monogamous and you're doing it because it's the right thing for you, and if you are living your life in the most authentic way with great pleasure, we have one life in this body. And so, like, why not try to make it the best you can? There's so much suffering. We struggle so much. So if somebody is throwing it at you, it's because they're suffering.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I have one more question for you. Okay. My last question is, what is your best sex tip? I love it. I love it. Thank you so much. This is, I feel like there's so much, like really juicy information in here in such an accessible way.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's really what I think that's one of the most important things that I can teach people is just like how to make it easy. It doesn't have to be complicated. Yeah. It could be good and juicy.
I love it. Thank you so, so, so much for coming on and talking to me.
Yeah. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for listening today. It would mean the world to me personally and would help us keep this little podcast going if you would subscribe, leave a review, or share this episode with your friends. For more personalized support with your own relationships, we can work together on a one-to-one basis. Just visit my website at aliciapayne.com and schedule a free call to chat about life, the universe, and your relationships. Bye.